this place has kind of cradled me since I graduated from college. I still remember my neighbor telling me when I had to live with my parents when I came back and I graduated, and that was really, felt like a step down, you know? It's like big poet girl in college, and all of a sudden I'm like in Brookline again. And Mrs. Fry, who always slipped me M&Ms when I was a kid, kept sending news clippings over and saying, oh, there's this reading out at Gustine's, which is Hemingway's now. And she was such a nice lady. I still think about her all the time. So finally, I dragged my friend Barbara Jones out here. We met Michael and Sheila Flavin. And then I proceeded to get drunk, and Barbara got drunk, and we drove down Fifth Avenue into bus lane and got a fucking ticket. But that was what it was like to hang out with me when you were 21. Hopefully things are a little better now. $70, I split it with her. Her mother hated me. Okay, so this poem is, I was lucky to be part of a writing group with Deborah Bogan at her house, and we used to just free write together. And she would just give these crazy prompts, and this is one of them. I think the prompt here was to write about a painting. And so what I wrote about is a painting that I bought from Jane Hyland. Does anybody remember Jane Hyland? She's a really wonderful painter. I think is she from Australia or New Zealand? I don't know. You probably know her. Yeah, I'm sure. That's like when people say, are you related to my friend so-and-so Smith? I was like, yeah. Okay. So anyway, the name of the painting is also the title of this poem. Lord, I have the patience of a saint, but I'm no angel. No, I ain't. As if the entire city of my birth could be entered through a croquet wicket. As if the single working mill was deep inside the navel formed by rivers, softening the land, smokestacks, the cauterized ends of what was once a vital connection. As if the smoke, looping like halos over the heads of cartoons, lent the blue of the sky an articulate grace, an unmovable place as the innermost backdrop to history. As if we cleared our throats all at once and heard our fundamental innocence pronounced in thickest orange. The color safety's war to cross us in the morning, the colors hunters wear to keep from getting shot. I sketched a life of angel with the depth and width of angel and the stranger shifting lengths of angels caused by all the scrims they wear and every fluid see-through thought that cloaks even their shadows. Then I painted over that with all the chores I do not love, because the uncle said, the father said, the mother and the mother's mother, faces lathered up in dove, said, it's a hard place. Every time I say these words, my mouth is like a tailpipe, and the angel perches on the hood of what pulls out and puts out such exhaust. It's a very, very, very hard place. If you tried to lift the canvas, the layers would flake off like landmass from a bas-relief. Better leave it hanging here above the cherry mantle and the wrought iron fireplace grill. The wickets could be horseshoe magnets tearing coke or coal out of the ground. Seersucker saints with cigars swing their mallets, so you keep your noggin low, you know. The painting soothes until the eye goes where the eye, a pool ball magnetized toward just one pocket hole, will go. The patience of a saint explains the trolley ride great-grandma took on Sunday nights from Hazelwood to that big doctor's house, where she cleaned and watched the children the whole week and hoped her kids, left alone, behaved. Because behaving was the first thing. Further down the list were praying, hoping, taking joy in life, things that depend on to behave. As Angel needs a saint's corrupted body to show what's possible with faith. How the trolley did rely on hash mark wires against the lowered lid of hell to give the passersby a sense of shock and showering sparks. There must have been a rolling, dipping contour to her size. I think you helped me with that, Barbara, right? You helped me fix that. You definitely helped. And then we went to the, is it the biennial at PCA? I know it's the International to Carnegie, it's the biennial at PCA. We went, a few of us went and did some writing there, some free writes. And so this came out of at least two installations at the PCA biennial last year. It's called On the Late Extinction of the Mothers We Knew. Yeah, and definitely my workshop group helped me with this one. Yeah, definitely. We had to say goodbye to the clothesline conversations when a meteor outmatched the sun and the darkness caused the clothes to glow unwearable. No more would we overhear how the divorcee, three houses down, had let herself go, as a garden ungirdled to give way to brambles, rollers of barbed wire snarling chunks of the flyaway hair. Naturally, the ex-husband let himself go without blame. Who could blame him? His boxers were ironed twice a week. Some of the mothers thrived in this new dark, as mushrooms thrive in dark. In the meantime, our clothes hang like rinds and reminders. I picture our mothers in the 60s as dinosaurs roaming key lime lawns with coupons and clothespins in their mouths. Then a darkness so total, my mother's face glowed. If a meteor is hollow, habitation for the souls that used to need to wear the laundry. If a meteor is faceless, enough to bear the features of a truth, a Steinem or Friedan or Wollstonecraft. In the sonogram, fibroids floated in utero. Look, there's the egg you're about to release, said the doctor. I took this as praise. My surgical options, space invaders, asteroids. Sometimes when sighing about laundry, it helps to remember women in other parts of the world scrubbing clothes stretched on rocks in the river. A darkness so total, my mother's face glowed, and she let herself go back to school, got a job, let the dryer sheets casually mentor our socks. Meteor became mother, a shell that could shelter unsupervised selves, poking heads out of various portholes. With all this stuff that's been happening in the past, I'd say, well, it's been happening all along, but it's been really stepped up in the past 5 months, this whole anti-birth control thing that's been going on. I just really bad moment when I thought, what's motivating this? And this poem came out of this bad moment. It was probably just me having a really bad moment. So if it upsets you, I don't always think this way, but it just occurred to me that all this had this really terrible source. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so. It's called We Want More White Babies. We want more white babies. You, natural resource, make more. Abhorrent 2040, overrun and overruled. You can always close your eyes. White babies, lovely. Brown babies, lovely, but hollandaise darkening to curry. May white babies billow like smoke from your bodies. White Jesus teach gun safety to white babies, teach rape to make the best of a bad situation and stockpile white. the weapons, sing. We are the world in our bright, shiny schools, where integration means a few or few enough to keep the world we are, the world we know. Tools, collars, clatter, rose lapels, scriptures tacked to minivans. The sanctity, the innocence, the sperm meets egg, but earlier, oh no, what's next? One baby rules? Life begins at push back, push, don't push, yet push until life begins at skin, your woman white skin, always on the brink of sin. We would like to husband. You can always put your yield up for adoption. In the days when families were families and neighborhoods were safe, you know, before you could send your kids next door for cups of sugar, cups of flour. Bad moments. I have a confirmation name. If you're a Catholic, you get an extra name. Because you can always use an extra name, right? So it's Teresa. And we had to read about a saint. And decide. I read Teresa the Little Flower, not the passionate one that was having the orgasm in the sculpture. No, I pick this super neurotic, prepubescent woman who really just wanted to be with her sisters because they joined the convent. And she wanted to go to the convent. So she just kind of tortured herself and put herself into delirium all the time. Okay, so every once in a while, I check in with St. Teresa, the Little Flower, and write a poem about her. I wouldn't call it a series yet, because I only have two. But Angel knows all about the Little Flower. We've chattered back and forth about this on Facebook. So. That's a good one. I mean, that's a hefty name, right? Wow, those saints, they're too much. So this is called The Little Flower Coming Out of Temporary Deafness Sees That She's Growing Breasts. How do you whistle in French without disappearing, finally, into pointillistic orchards where a single speck of water, dye, humiliates the paper? Father's leather billfold holds the bullocks grunting still. The cow's compliance fogs the glass of her immense, unhappy eyes. The silver coins that used to be the chatter of my sisters are spent. No clatter sparks the lint of ancient air that holds them ageless in the convent. Musky, round, the bullock sacks slapped slackened folds below the heifer's hips. The smack I hear now in the kitchen as our cook prepares the hen I'll watch my father eat today. I would whistle to make myself thinner, would whistle to bring down the slates of our roof one by one. I would summon another delirium, swim the thin vein to my room where the garden begins. With the shutters between me and that veil of milk mixed with sweat, I would twist on the stem of my spine to seek some other sun than the one that makes glistening wet of the hay near the hooves. I would whistle for peasants to pull me in every direction until I was holy and flat as a tray, as the flower dried inside the cow-hided Bible, whose pages sound just like the whispering feet of my sisters at dawn on the way to the chapel. Nowhere in the book does it say I must eat. I will sleep in cold midnight, inviting a fever, the stem of me bending. My eyes will not leave. The corolla is monstrance, believe me. Okay, so this is coming out, and I told you about, you know, drinking and all that, and Fifth Avenue and the bus lane. This is coming out at 5 a.m., and Judy helped me with this. She actually talked me into changing the safe word at the end. And I don't even want to tell you what the safe word was before it became what it is now. But, and this also comes from a prompt that Deb Bogan threw out, which explains why there are repeated words. We had to use these words like ankle, at least. You'll see. You'll say, what are these annoying words? Why do they keep coming up? Why doesn't she look in the dictionary? And that's why. At least a hex of vodka. I was ankle deep in confusion, or at least a hex of vodka. Good that someone, was it me, put a hex on the rifle, or at least tackled it to the ground and tossed it far into the brush. I was rehearsing for a big part in a minor play. You could call it foreplay, or at least a wet soul kiss on the cheek of a man with a pickup truck, a hunting dog, and tabs at every bar along Route 30. His drinking put a hex on his artistic aspirations. My thinking put a hex on my to-be-squandered youth. My ankles, cords of worried wood, braced me from pitching through the windshield when our May-January operation lost control on a downhill, slammed a Buick or Impala, I forget. No injuries, at least, and unbelievably, no DUI. Although it put a hex on me for many years. And if I had fears, I'd subdivided them to general anxiety that called for at least beer or something stronger until I was in a tunnel all alone, my car a snub-nosed wreck against the Jersey barrier. And the police woke me so traffic, at least, could get through once more. In jail, my ravings put a hex on the other captives' plans to get a good night's sleep. This rap sheet cast me, at the very least, as Hamlet in the form of a young woman, heir of nobody, the least compelling plot in which the living walk the ramparts of a city block and put a hex on bourgeois peace by waving small guns in the rain. At least my father did when he was playing ghost on Too Much Seagram's, calling forth the haunting of a friend shot down on a routine domestic call. This, at least, a cop show I could recognize, the kind in which the nerves are ravaged daily, then are brought to flower in a cobalt coral hex of drunkenness. At least the cast, through all its fearful throes and reenactments, survived. In S&M, the bottom has a safe word. I don't know, in my case, what that word would be when things turn fast from thrill to hell. Hex would be at least a start, but could be misconstrued as sex, which has no place in S&M. Casket, maybe. When the glass is at the lip, remember to say casket. At least the pistol clip is safely tucked where he can't find it now. Hex could be a code for what I swore to him I'd do next time. I'm going to finish with this poem. I've been like working on a house a lot, and I'm really lucky because my partner in this house does this for a living, so he teaches me things, and he's doing all the work. I mean, I have really, really ridiculous little jobs, but of course I'm a poet, so I make a big deal out of it. He just goes and like does the whole house, and I do this one thing. Okay, so what's this from? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. What's that from? Is that like the Buddha himself, or did he act he himself, or some?
The Buddha.
Buddha, comma, the. Okay. All right. So when the student is ready, the teacher will appear in the form of a banister in an old house you have only 2 months to make into a home. You will sand down each spindle to painful nakedness, sanding off so much skin from your own hands that all week the nerves tickle into a panic every time you touch clothes. Then there is the primer, caustic scent you'll be reading in your sleep, long after the woodwork's been coated, sealed in. The spindles each shaped like androgynous women, hips flaring out until binding their impulse to excess back in, like bottles inside which a genie might hide. Rubbing these bottles, already you knew that nothing so great as a genie would appear, though the wish got you through the first spindle or two. The teacher's appearance is flatter than that, a stray carpet nail on the sixth step, the claw tooth can't pull. One of these for every dozen that come out as easy as rotted through molars. And then there's your partner in all of this, off in another room fitting a new chandelier. The shop vac's an elephant sucking up sawdust, screws, bits of your skin. So now you can't hear him coaxing the fixtures the way he coaxed you into being here with him and learning these lessons all over again. Aww.
Thank you.